Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back in making his 11th appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate, his former Pro Bowl linebacker, Chad Brown. Let me remind you about Chad's background. He's from Pasadena, California, played his college ball at Colorado, where he was a four-year starter and an all-Big Eight selection his junior and senior years, and a second-team All-American his senior year as well. Chad was inducted into Colorado's Athletic Hall of Fame a couple of Novembers ago. He's in our Thursday Night Tailgate Hall of Fame as well. Chad was a second-round pick in 93 by the Steelers. He played linebacker in the NFL for an amazing 15 years from 93 to 2007 for the Steelers, Seahawks, and Patriots. And all, he played in 189 games. He had 79 sacks. He forced 17 fumbles, recovered 15, had 6 interceptions, and he scored 3 touchdowns. He won the Joe Green Performance Award while he was with the Steelers in 93. He was named to the Seahawks' 35th anniversary team. And he's now a fantastic football analyst for places like the Pac-12 Network, Westwood One, ESPN, and we're very excited he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Chad, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back
on the show. Fantastic to be on with you guys. It's been a while, so hopefully you guys are doing fantastic.
Indeed we are.
Good.
So, Chad,
I
got to start out tonight by getting your thoughts on our Steelers. First of all, on the defensive side, boy, the defense sure took off, you know, once Minkah Fitzpatrick came to town. I'm curious to get your thoughts. Is it just a coincidence that things seemed to get a whole lot better when Fitzpatrick came to town? Or is it possible that a guy playing safety, can come in and make that big of a difference?
Well, I think it's a couple of different factors there. If you're Keith Butler, you know, coming in and replacing Dick LeBeau now a couple of years as the defensive coordinator there, it takes a while, I think, for you to get up to speed. And then you need playmakers at certain positions to play that style of defense. So for Fitzpatrick to come in and be that kind of guy at that safety spot, that gives Keith Butler a tremendous amount of tools now to deal with. You know, they've got a Watt on the outside. Dupree came along as the season went. So they had players step up, but the tool of Fitzpatrick, who can cover, who can be in the box, who's a playmaker back there on the back end. Again, I think that was probably the piece they needed. So I'm looking forward to seeing that defense next year. You know, now they've got some confidence built, particularly in the second half of this season, how they come out in this 2020 season.
And Chad, you mentioned Bud Dupree, and that's a guy that sort of came into his own this year. We've been waiting for a long time for sort of the light to go off. He's been sort of a fringe linebacker, 4 or 5 sacks a year. But really came into his own this year. Just happened to be a contract year. How much do you know, should Steeler fans buy into that the light bulb went off and he can pull this off if the Steelers were to try to sign him to a long-term deal? Does it give you pause that it came on in a contract year?
I think as a, you know, general manager and as a head coach, yeah, when you're looking at guys in their production and it happens to spike in a contract year, I think you're forced to dig a little deeper into what was going on. Was it injuries before? Was it lack of partner on the other side? A guy like now with Watt on the other side that makes it easier for a guy like Bud Dupree to get single block. You know, all those other factors in it. I mean, what kind of football character has this guy shown, you know, since he's been in the facility? Is he a guy who we're always worried about his weight? You know, because those kind of guys, once they get the money in their pocket, you know, they don't worry about their weight so much anymore. So, all those factors, I don't know Bud Dupree on a personal level, so I can't say, you know, whether they should be concerned or not, but I definitely think anytime a player has a tremendous season on a contract year, that requires a much deeper investigation of motives and who he is, and ultimately, what is his football character? Does he play because he loves the game, or is he playing for a payday? And the guys who play for a payday, they find ways to turn it down once they've been paid, and we've seen that story so many times before.
So, Chad, if you were the Steelers GM right now, and we're all sort of, Steeler fans, we're all sort of collectively holding our breath on the health of Ben Roethlisberger's elbow. If, they take everything off and he starts to throw, we hear that might start taking place in February. if all signs are pointing up and he's not, you know, yeah, I feel good, this is a good thing. If there's any sort of, ooh, I'm not so sure. Well, you know, we need to take it a little slower. I mean, are you starting to look at veteran quarterback to bring in? Or are you putting all your chips on Mason Rudolph on the hopes that Ben gets better throughout the rest of the year before we get to training camp? And if not, we're good with Mason Rudolph. Or are you going a different direction?
Well, looking at, you know, the backups behind Ben, you got Mason Rudolph, you got Devlin Hodges, you got Paxton Lynch. I don't think any of those guys lit it up last year. I know they had some success with some of those guys, but I don't have enough feeling of confidence that I'm willing to rest my season on the shoulders of Mason Rudolph. I'm going either into the draft or going into free agency and trying to find something. I'd rather go into the draft maybe a year early than a year too late. The quarterback is clearly the most important position in all of football. And if Ben is not healthy, I think you've got to plan on rebuilding or, you know, kind of tearing that position down and starting over again rather than trying to make do with what you have.
Bob, questions for Chad?
Hey, Chad, it's great to have you back on. And Chris and I always like to take people back to their younger days and basically how they became a football player. And that means as far as the multi-sport athletes that some people were. Talk about the upbringing in California, Chad. What sports there were for you, and when did you finally become a linebacker?
Well, you know, I grew up in California, so I had a chance to play outside almost all year round. So whatever sports season it was, that's what all the kids in my neighborhood did. So I grew up in one of those, you know, classic 70s neighborhoods with tons of kids, and we were always outside. And, you know, your mom said, don't come back in until the streetlights are on. So every, you know, afternoon after school, that was an opportunity for me to play with my friends. And no matter what the sport was, we got after it. So if it was baseball season, we played baseball. If it was basketball, we did basketball. Track was a very big thing in the city of Pasadena. My high school, the John Muir Mighty Mighty Mustangs, we are the only high school in the National Track Hall of Fame. Very successful program there. So everyone in Pasadena, even before the high school level, is aware of track and how important it is. So we had relay races at the local high school and junior high, even though it wasn't an actual track meet. I swam. So I did almost every sport that was possible. And I think that's something that kids today would really benefit from. So often they focus on just one sport so early in life. I think it leads to burnout. I think it leads to a little bit of a lack of passion. Certainly takes away some of the fun from it. And then from a purely athletic perspective, you can learn so many things from other sports that apply to other sports. I mean, you know, if you look at Hakeem Olajuwon, Hall of Fame NBA center, but his footwork comes from his time playing soccer as a kid. So I think kids today may miss out on some of that. So I played all the sports, and then I got to high school. I played primarily on the offensive and defensive line, so it wasn't until my sophomore year I finally started playing linebacker. And then I've been a linebacker virtually ever since then. Although my senior year, I played every position on the field except for quarterback. I even returned a few kicks. I think that's another thing. Kids not only specialize in just one sport, but sometimes they specialize in just one position. So my feel for playing linebackers was informed by my time playing offensive line and my time playing defensive line and understanding how all that works. And then playing running back, you know, that is what gave me the insight to when I was a blitzing linebacker of what a running back is thinking and how he tries to deal with blitzing linebackers. So all that background of multiple sports and then playing almost every position on the field, is what I think ultimately allowed me to be successful playing linebacker was the fact that I didn't only play linebacker when I was a kid.
That's terrific stuff. We hear that from so many people. That's some major insight there. And we haven't talked, Chad, since Coach Cower was elected to the Hall of Fame. And again, this is a guy that you came into the NFL with, actually played five seasons under him. Talk about what he meant to your career or what you liked about him and what ultimately got him to Canton.
I think the longevity, is clearly, a factor for coaches to make it into Canton. Longevity and then, continued success. Not always, you know, not the same kind of, you know, say the Patriots kind of success where every other year you're in the Super Bowl, but they were, you know, consistently a playoff team, always a high level team, always a team that showed up prepared, went through a couple different offensive styles, but still maintained their identity. So it was very clear what you were going to get when you played a Bill Cowher coach team. From the players inside that locker room. So I played for him my first 4 years in the league, and then I went back there for my 14th season. So I was gone for 10 years and came back, and, you know, Bill had certainly gotten older and had modified some things, but things hadn't really changed. How he wanted to win football games, how he wanted his team to play, all that was very much the same. He wanted you to go out there, overwhelm the other team with how hard you played. And that was a lesson that I learned very early on as a Pittsburgh Steeler. And I really tried to do that throughout my entire career. Even with other teams and other coaches with different styles, my baseline, how am I going to defeat this guy in front of me? I'm going to just overwhelm him with how hard I play. You know, I may not be bigger. I may not be faster. I may not have the same level of experience or technique. But I'm going to just keep coming hard every single play. And at some point, he's going to succumb to how hard I'm willing to play. And every Steeler fan, and I imagine most football fans, are familiar with that clip of, you know, Bill kind of bringing up, I believe it was a kickoff team right before the game. He says, you know, go out and punch him in the mouth first. And that is that whole mindset of, we're going to overwhelm people and shock them with how hard we are willing to play. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to punch him in the mouth first. So that's the style that he preached. That's the style that the Steelers played in. And that's the style that was clearly successful for him. So for him to go into the Hall of Fame made complete sense to me. Just another person who I played with or played for who has gotten, you know, admitted into the most sacred of football venues. Couldn't be, you know, more proud of him and what he's accomplished. And again, so personally proud of all those guys to have played with him, whether it was Jerry Rice or Cortez Kennedy or Walter Jones or John Randall or in the future guys like Tom Brady. All those guys were amazing players to or coaches to be with, to be around, and they all have earned that spot into the NFL Hall of Fame.
And Chad, when you talk about, you know, overwhelming, you know, the opposition and the technique that you use, I mean, what does that mean? Is it, you know, that we're not taking plays off? Is that, you know, was there a technique that you guys learned that, you know, could help you wear down, you know, an opposing offense, an offensive line? Was that speed? What were the things that you guys utilized to take that, you know, that vision and make it into a reality in the game plan?
Well, I think if you look back at the Steelers for a while, once you got to maybe year 9 and year 10, they were looking to get rid of you. That kind of changed after I left a while. They allowed some older players to stick around. But for the most part, during my time there, and, you know, for the couple years after, they wanted young, aggressive, hard-playing players. And I think they recognized that these guys may make mistakes, but when you make a mistake at 100 miles an hour, things tend to go okay. So I don't know if it was necessarily preached in the terms that I'm using or coached in the terms that I'm using, overwhelm people with how hard we play. But to be in that linebacker room with Kevin Green and with Greg Lloyd, they didn't take plays off. They went out and played as hard as they could every single play. And that was praised by Dick LeBeau or Marvin Lewis or Dom Capers. And that was highlighted on the highlight tapes on Monday for, you know, plays that we showed over and over to kind of, you know, demonstrate how you play Steeler football. So for a young player to come into that defensive room, it was pretty clear we weren't passive. We weren't a wait and see. We weren't a bend and break. We went out and just got after people. And we had a couple of years in my 4 years, well, my 5 years there, my 4 years, my first 4 years there, where I believe we were either the number one or number two defense in a couple of categories. And the effect of going out and playing so hard from the very beginning, we began to dictate to the offense. And it's very rare for a defense to have that ability. So often defenses are counterpunchers, or they try to surprise an offense. Everyone knew what we were going to do. I mean, we were called the Blitzburg Steelers. So there was no mystery about what was going to happen and how we were going to approach the ball game. So we dictated to people. They kept extra guys in, wouldn't put out five wides. They went with max protection. They kept an extra, you know, offensive lineman in as a tight end to deal with blitz packages. They did all those things and allowed us to dictate to them to take them out of their offense and take them out of the things that they felt comfortable with. So I don't know if I've actually answered your question, but I can tell you what the effect of what we did was. We flipped the table. We changed the script. Instead of us reacting to what the offense did, offenses came in and modified their game plans to deal with what we did.
In those situations, right, when you're overwhelming an offense, and I know that I'm sure you had many situations where you guys could tell, you know, we're either in their heads or we're wearing them down. Did you ever get any comments back from an opposing offensive lineman, a player like, oh my God, you guys are crazy?
Oh, of course. You know, after the game, you know, whenever it's going around shaking hands and saying good game, patting each other on the back, occasionally you'll get a, you know, comment from an offensive lineman. I had no idea who was blitzing and who wasn't blitzing because we had obviously the four linebackers on the field most of the time. So any of us could blitz. So often Rod Woodson came up and played that slot corner so he could blitz off at one edge. Carnell Lake in a strong safety spot, he was often involved in blitz packages. So Dick LeBeau and Dom Capers and their creativity, and then the personnel on the field to be able to go out there and execute it, to have four linebackers who can get after your quarterback at any single play, plus two members of the secondary who were really, really adept at being blitzers. Now we've gone from, you know, a quarterback saying, you know, these are the four guys who are going to rush. Now there's almost nine possible rushers on every single play. I don't know how an offensive line figures that out, and most often they couldn't. And I don't know how a quarterback is going, you know, we all hear when the quarterbacks are mic'd up and they'll say, 99's a mic, 99's a mic linebacker. That still doesn't help the offensive line because there's nine guys who are, you know, within blitzing distance, and it could literally be any of these nine guys. And we were not afraid to drop Joel Speed, our 315-pound nose guard, back into cover. And hey, he was actually pretty good at it, got his hands on ball. So, yeah, we frustrated quarterbacks, we frustrated offensive linemen. I certainly heard about it a lot on the field. And then now that I've done a number of coaching internships here in my retirement days, as coaches, you have to sit around and talk so often, and they would talk about those Steelers defenses and how hard they were to defend because you had no idea who was going to come on a given play, and you could not really get the offensive line to be able to deal with that.
You know, we've had LeVon Kirkland on several times. We've had Greg Lloyd on the show several times. Interested to get your perspective. How often did Dom or Marvin call a play down to Kirk and, you know, whatever defense you guys were going to run, and Greg and Kevin override the call?
Well, as luck would have it for this conversation, I just spent 10 days out in California with Marv. So the NFL PA Collegiate Bowl, the college all-star game, Marvin was the head coach. Rod Woodson was the defensive coordinator. I was linebacker coach, and Carnell Lake was safeties coach. So we certainly had a chance to talk about all of that and all the old days, probably a little bit too much. But yeah, Kevin and Greg were certainly one to change the call, and typically it was to tight dog one, which was a double outside linebacker blitz, of course, and putting me and LeVon into coverage. And, you know, LeVon and I were young guys. You know, I started as a rookie. LeVon was starting in his second year. Kevin was coming in with some Pro Bowls from the Rams, and Greg Lloyd, perhaps, was the baddest man in football at that point of his career. So we were certainly justified in being intimidated by those guys. And, you know, the call would come in, and we would say it, and they'd go, no, we're going to run this. You're going to tell Greg Lloyd no in your rookie year, you know, in your second or third start? So you get to the sideline, and Marvin would be up in the booth, so he would call down the phone and say, hey, what's up? You know, we're calling different defenses than what you guys are running. And I'd say, well, I can give the phone to Greg and Kevin if you want, but we're calling it, and they're changing the calls in the huddle, coach. So, you know, so it was either that, or occasionally they would respect the call, and they would get to the sideline and get on the phone with Dom or Dick LeBeau or Marvin, say, hey, you got to get us involved. You got to get us, you know, going on some blitzes. You got to, you know, stop dropping us in coverage. And then, of course, Dom or Dick or Marv would change things up, and suddenly LeVon and I are chasing tight ends around the field, and those guys are getting after the quarterback.
No doubt. So, Chad, and you've talked several times on the show about all you learned when you went to New England and the things that Belichick and that coaching staff was able to teach you. I think you said in the past that it's some of the best coaching that you had over the course of your whole football career. Talk about Belichick, and now they may be at a crossroads there in New England, depending on if Brady's back or not. But talk about Belichick and his ability to just continue to bring guys in and continue to win.
I know people always think of Belichick and Brady, and they say, what is he going to do without Tom Brady? Let's not forget, he went 11-5 with Matt Castle. And I know that they didn't win the division that year, but they went 11-5 with Matt Castle. And if you saw Matt Castle at his other stop, Matt Castle was not anywhere near. No one would ever mistake Matt Castle's play for Tom Brady's play. So there's more ways for Bill Belichick to win games than just leaning on Tom Brady. When Brady was suspended for the first four games for Deflategate, he went 3-4 with Jimmy G and Kobe Brissett. So I know people are predicting the demise of the New England Patriots. But I think you got to be naive if you really understand football. And you've seen Bill Belichick's ability to morph his team for personnel, for league trends, for the health of certain players, and get high production out of guys. He had Danny Amendola, Troy Brown, and Julian Edelman. Those guys have all played defensive back for the Patriots. And they went out one game with those guys playing defensive back. They won playoff games with Troy Brown, the receiver, playing defensive back. So let's not act like, oh my gosh, it's only been Tom Brady. Bill Belichick has been incredibly creative. You know, for a while, it was not in vogue to have a fullback on your team. So he started putting defensive linemen at fullback, starting with Richard Seymour. Now this year, they had success running the ball when their fullback got hurt, behind a linebacker. So his understanding of football, his understanding of personnel is really, in my opinion, unparalleled. And I think you will go broke if you continue to bet against the New England Patriots just because Tom Brady may not come back. And just to go over some of their Super Bowl wins, when they first won Super Bowls, it wasn't because of Tom Brady. They played good defense, and they ran the ball with guys like Corey Dillon and Antoine Smith. Then they went with the two tight end attack with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. And that revolutionized the way played offensive in the NFL. And tight ends were now suddenly back in vogue, which we're still seeing the continuation of that with George Kittle and Travis Kelce. Oh, and then after that, yes, and there's Randy Moss, and there was Wes Welker, and they set NFL scoring records. So he's a guy who can beat you defensively. He can beat you lighting up the scoreboard. He can beat you running the football, and he can beat you with various quarterbacks. So, Patriot fans, don't be scared, and the rest of the league, do not count out the Patriots just because, you know, they may have to move on from Tom Brady. Bill Belichick knows lots of ways to win football games.
Bob, one more for Chad.
Yeah, Chad, I think we touched on this in the past, but I find it fascinating that a guy like yourself at such a physical position was able to hang around for 15 years to the age of 37. Just what do you attribute that to, Chad? Is it genetic? Is it diet? Is it just working out, combination of everything? But what do you attribute it to? That's an amazing run for a defensive player.
Well, I think, you know, you have to acknowledge, first off, the things that you had no control over. Thanks, Mom and Dad, for making me 6'3", and being able to, you know, carry 245 pounds. So, yes, you know, in some ways I won the genetic lottery. So that's, you know, kind of gives you the prerequisite size just to be able to play the game. But I certainly believe, and I recently got into a Twitter argument with someone from Pro Football Focus who was describing durability and longevity in the game as luck. And I just found that to be insulting, not just for me personally, but, you know, if you think about some of these guys who I've played with, so Kevin Green played 15 years, Rod Woodson played 17 years, Jerry Rice played 20 years, Tom Brady played 20 years. I just coached in this NFLPA Collegiate Bowl game with Jackie Slater. He played 20 years. You know, LeVon Kirkland played 13 years. So I've been around guys who know how to play the game, this incredibly physical, violent game where you hit people, but you're able to protect yourself in some ways. There's a skill set to knowing how to do that. How to fall, how to roll when you hit the ground. If you've watched any games of me, I certainly play with a reckless style, but at the same time, I got my feet out of the ground. If I hit the ground, I roll instead of putting my full body weight onto that hard turf at Three Rivers Stadium. There's a certain skill set, a certain learned skill that I think some players are able to do and other players aren't. They just have an innate sense of how to get their body into positions where they can, you know, still be safe while playing this game. But to, you know, dive into the more personal aspect of it, yeah, I trained my butt off. Every year, as soon as the Super Bowl was played, I started training the Monday after the Super Bowl. You know, my wife made a nice soft home for me. She prepared good food for me. Sleep was important. Proper diet was important. Never letting myself get out of shape, particularly once I got older as a player. All those things were critically important. Yeah, because you don't reach 10 plus years in the NFL just by being lucky or just by being a good athlete. There's a tremendous amount of work, focus, preparation that goes into that just to be able to deal with the physical demands of it. And oh yeah, you still have to play at a high enough level that somebody wants to employ you to go out there and play football. So yeah, it's a lot of work that goes into it. It's a skill that goes into being durable and having the longevity and then being able to modify your game. You're Rod Woodson. You're an all pro cornerback. You learn to play safety. You're Chad Brown. You're no longer the same quick player that you once were. Now you've got to add some strength to your game and you've got to change up some of the things that you do mentally to deal with your declining skills as you get older. Watching tape of Kevin Green get after the quarterback in year 5, he was a very different rusher than he was in year 15. So the ability to humble yourself, no, I can no longer do what I used to do, but here's the things that I still can do. Let me put myself in a position where I can do those and still be successful.
So Chad, before we let you go, got to get your pick for the game on Sunday. Who wins and why?
Okay, wow. Well, you know, I did 5 weeks this offseason with the 49ers, working with that defensive line group. So 5 first-round picks in that defensive line group. So I know everyone's talking about how special Patrick Mahomes is, and he is clearly an amazing arm talent and the most special, most gifted quarterback in the NFL right now. But how do you get after a quarterback like that? With some pressure. You make him uncomfortable. You have athletes almost as good as him chasing him down. So guys like Dee Ford, guys like Bosa off the edge, you know, the Armstead and the Forrest Buckners and Solomon Thomas. So all 5 of those first round picks, all those guys can get after the quarterback. They have a couple other guys in that group as well. Now, you know, he can throw to Travis Kelce. Well, they got some pretty good linebackers on that San Francisco defense. I know everyone's talking about the speed of Tyreek Hill and Richard Sherman being older and a little bit slower. Well, they play primarily cover 3 zone. So he's not really truly going to be matched up with him man for man very often, nor is anybody in that secondary. So that kind of starts to negate the Tyreek Hill speed factor. Creatively, on the offensive side for the 49ers, I don't think there's more. I give kudos to my former college teammate, Eric Bieniemy, and Andy Reid for what they do offensively. But right now, the vanguard and the ultimate peak of offensive creativity is Kyle Shanahan. And the things that he does to you as a defender, where he understands what your rules are defensively, he puts you in a position where you have to follow your rule and then the play ends up breaking the rule. There's a clip that's been going around on the internet, particularly on Twitter these last couple days, where George Kittle is releasing on a pass route. But instead of releasing outside the tackle where he lines up, he goes inside the tackle and releases. In my 15 years, I don't think I ever saw that, not one time. So once a tight end goes inside and I'm responsible for, well, he's just a blocker. My eyes are going other places. Shanahan understands those kind of things. So I know Chiefs defense has played better. I know Jimmy G is not the same kind of quarterback that Mahomes is. In the end, though, I think the creativity of Kyle Shanahan is a notch better than what Andy Reid brings. In the end, I think that defensive front, those five pass rushers, five first-round picks for the 49ers, are going to be enough to, you know, get a hit or two on Patrick Mahomes. And so in a game that's going to end up being a very close game, a 3 or 4 point game, that's going to come down to, you know, 3 or 4 plays overall, I think the difference will be that front group for the 49ers and a play or two better from Kyle Shanahan over Andy Reid and that creative offensive play calling thing that they do back and forth. And that's what will get the 49ers a close victory. High scoring game, close game, but a 49er win.
All right. When you say high scoring, you think in 34-30, you think in what's high scoring?
I'm thinking maybe even like 41-38. Somebody cracked a little.
Wow.
40, something like that. I do not think it's going to be a defensive battle. But again, one or two big defensive plays, a third down sack of Mahomes that ends that series for the Chiefs. You know, something like that. Just a couple of plays here and there are going to make that difference in that 3 or 4 point game.
Chad, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing and follow you on social media?
You can find me at ChadBrown94 on Twitter. I don't do all the others. I'm not quite cool enough for that. I'm busy enough. So follow me on Twitter. You can usually follow my exploits, football there. A little bit of stuff recently from the NFLPA game. That was a lot of fun. And, I'm sure I'll be tweeting out during the Super Bowl like every former player, giving his thoughts and opinions.
Chad, it's always a privilege for us to get to spend some time with you. Thank you for being generous with your time and coming back and joining us tonight. You're fantastic.
I always love being on with you guys. Thanks, Chris and Bob, for the opportunity to catch up with you.
You take care, Chad.
Take care, Chad. All the best to you and your family. Right, we'll catch up soon.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
See you later.
That's the great Chad Brown. Boy, you want to talk about analysis from top to bottom, Bob. This guy knows his stuff. He's always so insightful.
Hey, exactly. That's all I'm thinking when I'm listening, Chris. An incredibly intelligent guy who combines that just being a former player with a lot of intelligence, being an analyst, and my goodness, really, really great stuff about being a multi-sport athlete and being and everything that goes into longevity. That was, to me, that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, same. Couldn't agree more. Hang with us on the other side of this real quick break. We'll get into our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive.